The subject tonight, God's three laws of marriage. I invite your attention to the 19th chapter of Matthew, verses 3 and 4. Every time I preach on this subject, I'm reminded of the young man who was not married, and he decided to preach a sermon on how to rear your children. And then a few years later, they had children, and he changed it to tips for raising your children. And later on, they had teenagers, and he changed the sermon to suggestions for rearing your teenagers. That's about the way I feel about this subject, except that I've had a whole lot of training in counseling, those kinds of things. So the thoughts tonight are God's, not mine. There is an epidemic in this country when it comes to our homes. They are falling apart everywhere. In the latest census, it was discovered that 51% of the people living together are now doing so without benefit of legal marriage. Also, it's the case that for every marriage in this country, there's just about a divorce. It's about 50-50 now. We have a serious problem with teenage marriages, and we'll discuss that in just a moment. We have a serious problem with Christian marriages. Years ago, we decided at the South Haven congregation to have a seminar for married couples. When they came on Friday night, we had the room for 20 couples. I told them that every time I saw them over the weekend, I wanted them to be holding hands. I wish you could have observed that. It looked something like this. And I began to discover something about my brothers and sisters. It isn't all heaven at home here either. They have failed or not learned how to communicate with each other, sadly. The conversation in most homes goes something like this. He gets up, he gets ready for work. She says, "What do you want for supper?" He said, "I don't know, fix anything." When he gets home, he reads the paper or watches television. And they might say goodnight sometime during the day. And that's about the extent of it. And so I was beginning to learn that even in the church, marriages are back to back. They aren't what God wants them to be. We were aware when we offered a Love Life in Christian Marriage class at South Haven of something even more phenomenal. I thought that the 25 to the 35-year-olds would want to come to that class. The 65 and 75-year-olds wanted to be in that class. Especially the wives. That troubled me. And so what I want to do tonight is discuss this passage here in Matthew, the 19th chapter, verses 3 and 4. You'll read there in verse 3 that the Pharisees came to Jesus tempting him, saying, "Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause?" This statement came from a group of rabbis championed by a fellow named Hillel, that was teaching that a Jewish man could put away his wife for any reason. Whatever it was, he could put her away. And they had misread Deuteronomy 25, 1 through 4, misapplied the word there, uncleanness, to anything. There was another school, though, led championed by a fellow named Shammai, who was teaching that that word uncleanness meant fornication only. And Jesus agrees with him. If you'll drop down there to verse 9, you'll see that Jesus said, "That's what Moses taught, and that's what I'm teaching. That this is the only reason to end a marriage and get remarried if you're not the guilty party." But notice the next statement that Jesus makes to them. What was their question? Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for any cause? Jesus said, "Have you not read?" That's important to me. We've been given a marriage manual by God Himself. He's given us instructions on how to have the homes He wants us to have. After all, He performed the first wedding ceremony. He created that woman, and the Bible says He brought her to Adam. I think Adam just looked at her and went, "Wow." And that's the way we should look at our wives today. Wow. He said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. I'm going to call her Isha. I'm going to call her woman because she came right out of my side." Have you not read? That's an important question. Look over at Matthew 22 a moment. This is a conversation Jesus had with the Sadducees. I always ask the young people, what's the difference between the Pharisees and the Sadducees? They don't know, so I say, well, the Pharisees believed in the resurrection, but the others did not, so they were sad, you see. Well, they are confronting Jesus about that resurrection here. Verse 23 of Matthew 22. The same day came to him the Sadducees, which say that there's no resurrection, and asked him, saying, Master, that probably was said with a curl of their lips as they were sneering at him. Master, Moses said, if a man die having no children, his brother shall marry his wife. This is the Levirate law, unusual law, not anymore under the law of Christ, but was under the law of Moses, and raise up seed unto his brother. Now there were with us seven brothers. And the first, when he had married a wife, died, and having no issue, left his wife unto his brother. Second, third, you know, if I'd been this lady's fifth husband, I would have started checking the ground glass and the cereal, wouldn't you? I'm mocking this because they really don't have an argument. They have what's called in logic a sorite, but it's not an argument. It's just I'm going to pile it up. You ever had anybody tell you a joke, and he said the first man said, the second man, he gets down to the fifth man, he could have told the joke from the first man, but he wants to build it up. That's what they're doing here, building up their case. Likewise, the second and last of all, well, I guess so, after seven husbands, she died. In the resurrection, whose wife shall she be? For every one of them had her. He said, you fellows made two mistakes. You do err. Number one, you don't know the scriptures. And number two, you don't know the power of God. For in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage. Please underline that and keep it in mind for just a moment. In the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage. Why? Because both of them or one of them is like an angel in heaven now. Lost his or her gender. Keep that in mind, please. But as touching the resurrection of the dead, and here's our line now, have ye not read? You know, a lot of doctrinal error, a lot of problems in marriage, a lot of problems everywhere would be solved if folks would just read this. Now, what was it they were supposed to read? Watch. Have ye not read that which was spoken unto you by God, saying, I am the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob? Did you get resurrection out of that? You should have. Because they knew that when that was said, the body of Abraham, the body of Isaac, and the body of Jacob had been dead for 1,000 years. But God's not the God of the dead, but of the living. If he's able to keep Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob alive somewhere for 1,000 years, it's no problem for him to bring them back in a resurrected form. See, they forgot what the scripture said, and they forgot God's power. He's not the God of the dead, but of the living. Tonight, it's important to answer that question. Have you not read? Husbands and wives, listen to what Jesus says now. Let's read it. Let's go back to Matthew 19:4. Have you not read? What was their question? Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? Have you not read? That he which made them male and female, he answered their question. God only made one male. He only made one female. Adam never had to say to Eve, am I the only one? He was the only one. There was no other one. And God expected Adam and Eve to stay together until they died. That's God's plan. It always will be. I wish we could get that across to young people today. I wish we could get it across to some older folks today, that God said, once you marry her, that's it. That's it. Unless she dies. If she dies, she ceases to be a female. She becomes like an angel. Therefore, losing her femaleness, her husband is free to remarry because he doesn't have a female anymore. See, he made a male and a female. And incidentally, he didn't make a male and a male. And he certainly didn't make a female and a female. He made a male and a female. And so that's his plan. He's answered their question, has he not? That's it. Kathleen and you are it. Until she shoots you one day or something. That's it. And that's the way it ought to be. But I have an idea that's not the way it is in the minds of some who get married. I think they're thinking, we'll try it. If it doesn't work, we'll get another one. That goes on in this country all the time. It is Hollywood's message. It is the message of the media. But God said, I made a male and a female. Now, Keith, you and Dorothy are it. If I die, or when I die, then she would be free to remarry because I would cease to be a male. She would not have a male anymore in this life. We would know each other in heaven, but we would not have to be married there. You don't have to have children in heaven. Nobody dies. Now we come back to the statement. Is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? Have you not read? Incidentally, did you notice Jesus imprimatur on the creation here? He went all the way back to the creation to say that's when the man and the woman were made. They were made on the sixth day, and that was it. And he's telling us here that that Genesis is absolutely right in its statement about creation. He made a male and a female. Now watch it. Here's God's first law of marriage. And said, for this cause, what cause? I made a male and a female. And I said, well, he didn't have to tell Adam and Eve this, really, but it's for future generations. Adam and Eve didn't have parents. But from then on, a man should leave father and mother. Notice his first rule. Watch it. God doesn't want babies married. In our society today, sociological studies show us something. That young people up to the age of 27, males, are still adolescents. No longer is that a 13 or 14 or 15-year-old. That's a 20-some-year-old. And females up to the age of 25 are still in their adolescence, generally speaking. So you marry somebody at the age of 20, you got two babies married. And that's why teenage marriages in this country are ending, watch this, at an 89% rate. Why? They're not grown up enough to be parents. They're not grown up to be husband and wife. They're not grown up enough to manage a house. Young man, when you get married, you are it. You're her provider, her protector. You're the one that takes care of her. You're the one that pays her bills. Well, we have so many who get married today who aren't ready. Sitting in my office, and this young, I guess I'll call them a couple, came in. He was 16, she was 19. They were all excited. Brother Mosher, we want you to do our wedding. Now, that's like asking me to go beat my head against a wall. Marriages are not my favorite thing to do. It takes 2 days out of my life. And that thing Friday night called a rehearsal, there are three people who shouldn't be there. That's the two mothers-in-law and the bride. Because if they weren't there, we'd get done in 15 minutes. Why do I have to rehearse standing in the same place for 52 years where I've always stood in a wedding? I don't get it. Boy, I just stopped myself from having to do any weddings, didn't I? Anyway, we want you to do our wedding. Oh, where are you going to live? He said, with mommy. I looked at her and I said, well, you're the oldest. Are you going to support him? She said, I don't work. We read this passage and I said, this preacher will not do this wedding. I found out something about messing with bear cubs, mama bear calls. And she called me. Why won't you do the wedding? I told her. And I said, listen, if they do this, they will be divorced within a year. Because all they want is your bedroom. That's all they're interested in. They don't know what love is. They couldn't imagine what it is. They have no idea how to become that kind of a person. They're just babies yet. And God said, don't get married when you're a baby. And I was wrong. They got divorced in 3 months. Another brother came in my office one day, all excited. He wanted me to do the wedding. So I was writing down some information. I said, where do you live? And he gave me the address. I said, where's your fiance live? He gave me the same address. I said, you're already living together? Yes, but we're going to repent of it after we get married. We read Galatians 6:7 to that young man. He left angrily. I don't know whether he ever is even living in South Haven anymore, but I do know I didn't do that wedding. Notice what he said here, leave father and mother. When my oldest son married Cindy Claiborne, Winfrey Claiborne's niece, her daddy, an elder in the church in Duluth, Georgia, stood in front of her with a dinner plate and he snapped it in two. He gave one half to Cindy, he kept the other half. He said, Cindy, this symbolizes your new home. You're always welcome here, but you're starting a new home. Hang that on the wall. She still got it on the wall. And it reminded her that when she walked out of that house with that young man, that's a new home now. Mom and Dad aren't any longer in charge of it. Aren't supposed to be interfering with it. I'll never forget the first time these two that I'm talking about had an argument, and my son called my wife, and I said to my wife, hang up the phone. She said, no, I said, hang up the phone. We're not going to interfere. That's their squabble. Let's stay out of it. That was so hard for Dorothy. But it's right. They're supposed to leave Mommy and Daddy, aren't they? That doesn't mean I can't help them when I need to help them, but it does mean I don't interfere, and I don't pay their bills either. See, that's his responsibility, and that's exactly what God said. Well, sometimes if they get sick, I might have to do that, but that's another difficulty. Leave father and mother. Brother Eskew, do you know the number one reason that some men can't come to the school preaching? She won't leave home. Young lady, when you get married to him, you have to leave Mommy and Daddy. That doesn't mean you don't love them. That means you're starting a new home. And you go where he goes. You have to be like Ruth was to Naomi. Whither you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I'll lodge. You have to be like that. That's what God's saying. That's his first law. He doesn't want babies married. You have to go wherever he goes. Lodge wherever he lodges. Look at his second law. You ready, Victor?
Yes, sir.
Let's look at Ephesians 5. And cleave unto his wife. Boy, that's not understood at all. Incidentally, let me back up just a moment. Talking about leaving father and mother gets to be a sore point with some people, so let me expand on that just a second. Look at Matthew 7. I don't have to live with my mother and father to honor them. I do not have to live with my mother and father in order to honor them. Moses said, verse 10, honor thy father and thy mother, and whoso curseth father and mother, let him die the death. But ye say, they were trying to get around that, if a man shall say to his father or mother, it is Corban. What a horrible practice. When mom and dad got to the age when they needed the children's help, and that's a command to God's people, take care of your parents when they need it, the children were saying, I'm sorry, Mom and Dad, we gave our money to the temple. We don't have anything to take care of you. What happened then was when Mom and Dad died from lack of care, these children would go to the priest, he'd take his cut, and they'd get the rest of the money back. Corban. Jesus knew about that practice. But notice what he's teaching us about honoring father and mother. Yes, I leave them to get married, but I still take care of them when they need it. We come now to the second law of God concerning marriage, and that's cleave unto your wife. Let's start in Ephesians 5:22, Victor. That's in the New Testament.
Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord.
I want verse 21. I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong verse.
Submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God.
I remember when I was growing up, I heard my father say, dishes is woman's work. You ever heard that? I looked in vain for that in the Bible. I couldn't find it. Dishes is woman's work. If I said that to Dorothy, she'd show me how to do dishes or throw one at me. Dishes is woman's. You notice what that verse said? It's 100%, 100% in that marriage. We submit to one another. We help one another. I remember I came home one day. We had a 2-year-old boy and 8-month-old twins. In fact, in those days when they didn't have these boxed Pampers, we had to get diapers. The Whitey Dighty Diaper Service in Erie, Pennsylvania brought us 90 diapers every 3 days in a container. gave them the dirty container, and they took that one, and we got the clean one. 90 diapers. We've got a 2-year-old and 2 little babies. And I came home, and the house looked like a tornado had hit it. Everything was everywhere. It was such a mess. And stupid me, not knowing how to be submissive, I said, "When is supper ready?" She still doesn't like to cook for me. Because you women remember everything we say for some reason. You don't forget it. I'll talk about that in just a minute. Look what this verse says. Wives, submit yourselves. You submit yourselves one to another. That tells me that marriage is 100%, 100%. Whatever we can do to help, we do it. The fellow said, run things at my house. I run the washing machine, the dishwasher, and I do that. I am a great vacuumer. I make my bed every morning. How are you husbands doing? What's the next verse?
Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord.
Whose husband?
Your own.
Your own, yeah. You know, we have this attitude in the church that every woman should be in subjection to every man. I can't read that in my Bible. I'd like to find that verse. This says your own husbands. This has to do with your intimate subjection to him. And that word submit means to be second in command, incidentally. It's an idea of, here's my role as a wife. And this will make the marriage much more pleasant and happier if I will do what God told me to do. Not tonight, honey, I have a headache is a line a Christian woman should never use, or a man for that matter. And that takes a study of 1 Corinthians 7. Let's go on to the next verse here. It's in Ephesians 5.
For the husband is the head of the wife.
He's what?
The head of the wife.
That's still in there? He's the head of the wife? I like that. What's that mean? I'm the dictator? No. No. Let's find out how he's the head. Read.
Even as Christ is the head of the church.
Oh. How many of you Christian men and women are embarrassed to be in subjection to the Christ? Are you? Why would a woman be embarrassed to be in subjection to her own husband? That's what it's all about. That's what marriage is. And he's the head. That means he should take the lead. Unfortunately, that isn't often done, is it? Too many women become the spiritual leaders rather than the men, and so on. Let's read a little bit. Let's see how he's the head. In what?
Everything.
So if she wants to go to Kmart and I want to go to Walmart, we're going to Walmart, right? Right. That's what it says. I make those decisions. In fact, I make all the big decisions in our marriage. Haven't been any so far, but I make them when they come. Go on. Go on.
Husbands, love your wives.
What?
Husbands, love your wives.
How? I probably don't have to tell you husbands this, but she's different. Every husband here tonight, would you please look at your wife's head? Look at her head, please. Come on. Can you see Kathleen's head back there? Probably not. In fact, you can see it well tonight. She got her hair pulled back. On either side of her head, there's an ear. And that's where she operates. All the time, right here. And I have to say to my wife, I have to say it audibly so she can hear it, I need you. I tell her that every day of my life, married to her, when I'm around her. I told her on the phone this afternoon, I need you. She said, you're preaching on marriage tonight, aren't you? I said, yes, I need you. That's where she operates. You remember how you won her? You called her. You spoke to her. You tried to see her. You wanted her to hear you say to her, I love you. You know what happens when we get married? The husbands forget that. They become married bachelors. They run out hunting and fishing and whatever, and she's at home wondering. I thought that the way you loved a woman, Dorothy says we've been married 45 wonderful years, which means 11 of them weren't too good, but because I didn't know how to do it. I thought that loving a woman, when I went to work every day, old macho American man, and I would come home and mow the yard and keep everything looking nice, and I'm thinking she must know I love her, and she was sitting in the house all that time thinking, he doesn't pay any attention to me. Did Christ talk to the church? Did he pay for it? Did he purchase it? Did he love it? How'd you win her? You dated her. I teach my students all the time, date your wives. Call her for a date. Ask her for a date. Dorothy and I are going out Friday night. It will be expensive. I've been gone 5 days. Yeah. I bring her a rose every day, and I got caught one time trying to bring those silk roses so I wouldn't have to buy so many. She caught it. She said, that's not a real rose. So when you start it, you can't finish it. Somebody asked me when I preached like this, did I own a floral shop? I said, no. How did I win her? That's how I keep her. I date her. She's my sweetheart. And she operates right here. You and I don't operate that way. She is so different from us fellows that she doesn't even receive information the way we do. When she receives information, it hits both sides of her brain at once. The right side is the emotional side. The left side is the logical side. This emotional side in her leads her thinking. She hears things differently from the way we do. She relates to things differently from the way we do. How many of you have been sitting behind a woman at a stop sign and there's a car coming in the next county and she's waiting on it? Did you beep your horn at her? Don't do that. She is physiologically different. Her depth perception is different from ours, fellows. That's why you never want to teach your wife how to drive. Because you say, go, and she said, that car's coming. It's 6 blocks down there. No. She sees it much closer than you do. And I suppose you never argue over the thermostat, right? You and I need to know something, fellows. We are already 6 degrees different physiologically. She's colder than we are by nature. But we argue over those things, don't we? Because we haven't learned each other. Because I am left-brained and think logically, here's what happens. She came home one day and she said, I wrecked the car. My left brain went right into action. Boy, I was good at this. I said, are you hurt? No. I said, do we have insurance? Well, yes. I said, did you total the car? No. I said, well, we can get it fixed. I'll go sit down and read the paper. 1, 2, 3, it's all for me. I think she was thinking that she should go in the kitchen, get a frying pan, and whack me as hard as she could. Why? I didn't hear what she said. What she said was, I didn't get killed. Would you come over here and give me a hug? What she said that I heard was, I wrecked the car. But I forgot something about a woman. She speaks emotionally. And so in 56 years now, I have learned how to speak woman. And that's a struggle, folks. That's why these teenagers don't make it. They're not old enough to learn how to do that. They're not old enough to learn how to agape their wives. They're not old enough to learn that she operates right here by her ears. And there isn't any other way for us to treat her but audibly. I need you. You try that, fellows. Breakfast will get better. What she'll probably say to you the first time is, well, Keith told you to say that, didn't he? See, that's what you women do to us. Can you help us out a little bit? Have you guys ever been in an argument and she says, you know what you did? Aaron, that ever happened to you? Yes, sir. We don't know what we did, do we? So you wives have to help us out. You got to tell us what we did. We don't know. We have no idea. We're left-brained. It's all logic to us. We don't know that we insulted you because we said something about that food you cooked. It just doesn't make any sense to us. Read the rest of that verse, please. Protect it. That's my job. Protect her. Exalt her. She's my queen. Now, Victor, I want you to stand up and do something. I want you to turn around and read the passage in that Ephesians 5 that says, wives, love your husbands. Not there, is it? You may sit down. Wonder why it's not there. There's a reason. Sisters, he had to look at your head. I want you to look at his back now. See if he's got two shoulder blades. Take your right hand, put it right between those shoulder blades. And you tell him right now, he is the greatest whatever it is he does that ever lived. Your right hand, sister. You are using your right hand. That's your job. Read the last verse. The very last verse.
Nevertheless, let every one of you, in particular, so love his wife, even as himself. And the wife, seeing that she reverence her husband.
Leave father and mother. Cleave to your wife. What's my job? Tell her. And when I have, by my life and my speech, shown her that, everything gets better in the marriage. What's her job? She has to respect me. If she indicates that somehow somebody does my job better than I do, I lose that respect I need. She has to respect me in the sense that she doesn't go around telling her girlfriends how bad I am and all that kind of thing, and I've heard that before too. I stopped one time I was at a congregation holding a meeting, and when I was through that Sunday, the elder and his wife invited me home for dinner, and I went, and he wasn't there yet, but the children were, and they were telling me about Dad. And I thought, this has got to be the greatest guy that ever lived. I mean, they were bragging on their daddy. Everything they said was a brag about Daddy. I sat down at the dinner table and I just listened, and then it dawned on me what was going on in that house. She did that. She set that tone for her children's dad, and she respected him, and he knew it. And he was the king in that house, but she was the one making it happen, because she learned what Paul said there, reverence your husband. That's your job, sisters, if you're going to cleave to him. Respect what he does. He needs that more than anything. And wives, you love your husbands also, but respect is what he really needs. Did you notice it said, husbands, love your wives as Christ also loved the church? I have women tell me all the time, I don't like this idea of being in subjection. Oh, I said, you don't. What's that mean? Well, I don't know. We talk about it. I've already explained it tonight. And they say, oh. I said, besides that, if he wants to go to Walmart and you want to go to Kmart, just go to Walmart. He's the head of the house. And that's all you've got to do is go to Walmart. But sisters, have you ever stopped to think about something? We have to die for you, so why are you worried about going to Walmart? He told me to die for her. He didn't tell you you had to die for us. And this business of being angry about being in subjection, I don't understand it. Maybe it's that left brain I've got, but I don't understand it. Because when he, the Lord, loves me, I'm not embarrassed to be in subjection to the one who loved me enough to give himself for me. Husbands, love your wives. Wives, reverence your husbands. Now, if you do that right, let's read the end of verse 4, Matthew 19. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, cleave unto his wife, and they too shall be one flesh. What a promise. When you do it right, something wonderful happens. As a little boy growing up in the north, we had a cellar under our house, not a basement. It had a dirt floor. But under that house were the shelves for the canned goods. In that climate, you can keep them there. My job was to go down there and fight the cobwebs and the darkness and find whatever it was my mother sent me to get. And one day she said, go down there and get some preserves. I grabbed a jar off of the shelf that I knew was preserves and ran upstairs with it. And that lid had rusted on the top of that jar. Somehow, unbeknownst to me, women can get those lids off of those jars. I don't know how they do it. She got that lid off that jar, and when she opened it, it had been on the shelf so long that it was now completely sugar. When Dorothy and I do it right, the way He planned it, and we follow His laws, the longer we stay together, the sweeter and the sweeter and the sweeter it gets. But you can never get there without being a Christian. Husbands, she needs you to be a Christian man, God's man. Wives, He needs you to be God's woman. That's where it starts. Christians are people who've repented of their sins, confessed the name of Christ as deity before witnesses, and have been immersed in water in order to the remission of sins, because that's the time when God takes away all our past sins. He does not do it before then. But then we begin to read His book. Have you not read? He made a male and a female. He said, Keith, here's how you do it. You're an adult, and you learn how to cleave to her. You study it. You work at it. And you tell her you love her, and she respects you. And the longer that concurs when two Christians do it, the sweeter and the sweeter it gets. I promise you, if you're not a Christian tonight, now's the time to do it while we stand and while we sing.